So I give these words really to encourage all of you wherever you're at in your practice and whatever's happening for you in your life to continue to make the effort, because you definitely will get the results. Now, having said that, when we consider the meditation practice and what is the core of the meditation practice, again, what we are able to do consistently leads us on to establish what we need to develop in order for the meditation practice to take off. At the heart of the practice is the necessity to bring the mind to one-pointedness, ekagata. That one-pointedness means that the mind is able to stay in the present moment with the meditation object. It's a one-pointedness that is in time and with the meditation object, whatever that meditation object should be. So when we're trying to develop in one particular meditation sitting, we're trying to come to the one point of this moment and what is happening in this moment with whatever object we're paying attention to. When we start any meditation session, the mind, because it's been spending all the time apart from the meditation time, wandering in all sorts of directions to all sorts of areas of our life and our concerns, it naturally has a momentum which takes it away from the present moment. And the practice in the beginning is to keep focusing on this moment right now. And very often we have a sense of a wide or broad field of input from the environment around us as well. Not just that the mind is roaming back to home or ahead to the office, what's going to happen in the office after the weekend, but even as we sit here, the mind is roaming far and wide to the sounds of the traffic in the distance, to the sounds of the dog next door, to the sounds of the person who's sitting next to us, and then maybe to what's happening in our own body. The field of our interest is very wide, both physically and in terms of time. So in the meditation, as the meditation develops, we want to reel in the mind, just like we would reel in something caught on the end of a fishing line, to bring our attention from yesterday or last year or our childhood right back to this moment right now, to bring our field of attention, field of awareness from things far away to things very close to home, this breath, this body, right this moment, right here and now. And as we develop this in the meditation, there is a sense in which we can feel that field of awareness narrowing. There's a sense in which we, as we sit here, we feel our world getting smaller and smaller. The mind coming into this moment, coming into this breath. And as we are able to stay focused on the breath, moment after moment, breath after breath, the world apart from that falls away. The key for this to happen is to persistently reel the mind in, persistently place the mind on the meditation object. Persistently not give attention to wherever the mind has roamed to from this moment, from the meditation object. This persistent effort, this stable, ongoing, calm effort to bring the mind back so that we don't battle with the mind, we don't force the mind, we just very determinedly bring the mind back. And as we do that, the mind calms down, focuses in, and we start to develop a peaceful feeling from within the mind, which becomes something that we want to pay attention to. We want to keep coming back to that. And then it becomes much easier to maintain the focus of our awareness on the meditation object. Now, this is very similar to those people who've been coming here and practicing over time, who've been persistently putting in the effort and in small steps just building up the momentum to be able to finally be able to stay in the meditation for the whole day and experience the ease and the sense of well-being that comes from that. But they had to put in persistent effort, continuous effort over time. And that's what we have to do in each meditation session, to come to that one-pointedness. When we reach that one-pointedness and the mind starts to come together, then it's easy to stay there. And when we're able to bring the mind to that one-pointedness, the sharpness of the mind increases dramatically. The clarity of the mind increases dramatically. Once we move out of the meditation, whatever we put the mind to becomes so startlingly clear, so detailed, because the mind is able to focus on it to the exclusion of everything else. The mind is elevated. The mind is expanded. The mind has a strength which it doesn't normally have when it's scattered, when its energy is dissipated and lost through all its wanderings. So this one-pointedness becomes the platform, the means by which we can start to investigate things and see them in a new way and start to see them as they really are. It's only when the mind reaches that point that it is able to see in a new way. So now we're going to sit together and we're going to establish the mind in the present moment by first of all establishing our attention on the posture. So please make yourself ready for meditation. Remembering that the breath is a part of the body, so when we focus on the posture, we then narrow the focus of our attention to that one point, that one place, the flow of the breath. So take the first few minutes to bring your attention gradually into your body. Taking your awareness to the base of the body in contact with the floor or the chair. feeling the heaviness of the body spread over an area. And establishing in the mind the sense of being planted in this spot. In this moment. Becoming aware of your hands and where you have them. And then moving from the hands along the arms up into the shoulders. From the shoulders to the top of the head. Establish an awareness of the whole body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. Body sitting. Making any adjustments you need to for the body to be comfortable. To attend to its needs if there are particular places that are tight or aching. And when you're ready, moving your attention to the flow of the breath. To that place where you know that you're breathing in and breathing out. One place, resting the awareness there. And trying to be aware of each in-breath and each out-breath. As it naturally arises. Try to catch the mind as soon as it moves away from this moment. Bringing it back to the breath. is too unsettled to stay with the breath. It's always helpful to go back to the body, extend the area of awareness to the whole body, move through the body, and then gradually narrow the focus of awareness to the breath. Moving into the last part of the meditation. Establish your awareness in the present moment. Being clear what you're aware of in this moment. The mental and the physical components. Noticing the quality of the mind. Noticing the degree of contentment in the mind. Contentment with the present moment. Contentment there is, the easier it is to stay focused in the present moment. contentment, stillness, peace, energy all go together and feed one another. Take a look in the mind and see how much peace there is and how much stillness. And how much energy. Noticing the effect of meditation on the mind. Now, however the meditation has been for you, it's very helpful at the end to appreciate the effort that you've made, to actively generate a feeling of appreciation and goodwill towards yourself for having made the effort to be here and the effort that you've made in the practice. So take a few moments to appreciate yourself, generate a feeling of goodwill, mentally tell yourself, well done. Smile at yourself. And gently moving your awareness from just the mental feeling of appreciation and goodwill to send a feeling of kindness and care throughout the whole body, from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. A tenderness, a tender feeling for the whole body. Be aware of the whole body and yourself seated here. when you hear the sound of the bell for the end of the meditation, as you open your eyes, try to maintain the continuity of awareness so you can notice the effect of meditation on the mind, not just when you have your eyes closed and when you're focused on one object, but so you can be clearly aware of the effect of meditation on the mind once you're going about your ordinary activities. So with mindfulness and clear comprehension, you hear the sound of the bell, and with mindfulness and clear comprehension, you open the eyes when you're ready. Does anyone have any questions? Yes. Okay. The falling asleep is one of the normal hindrances that comes up. This is one of the five major hindrances that the Buddha mentioned as obstacles to meditation. This goes under the heading of Tina Mida in Pali, which means sloth and torpor. It's a drowsiness of the mind, a heaviness of the body. And it can come about because you're tired, and when you sit down to meditate, it's the nearest thing to getting a rest that your mind and body comes across, apart from when you go to bed. And so the association is very strong to fall asleep. That's one reason why sloth and torpor comes up. And when it's for that reason, you often can help yourself by working out when is the best time for you to meditate. What time of day are you most alert and awake, or when is the time of day when you know you're already tired and you are likely to fall asleep because this is the only time you're stopping during the day, or it's the end of a busy day or whatever. So just being aware of the fact that you may actually need a rest, but not during meditation, that can be helpful. When you are meditating and the mind is tired, the breath is not a very good object to use because it slows down everything too much. It requires too much fine attention when the mind isn't ready for that. And so it's better to choose an object which will stimulate the mind when the mind is already tired. And particularly if you take time to go through the body and pay attention to how the body feels with an attitude of curiosity and investigation, moving the mind over the body systematically, feeling the different parts and relaxing them, that will give the mind something to do rather than really bringing it to a point of non-activity when it's just watching the breath. So choosing an object that is more likely to use the mind, keep the mind going, but in a confined area, so you're just with the body. using an object like loving kindness meditation can be more useful at the time if you're tired, because it again requires that the mind works a bit more. You have to think of different groups of people that you are going to offer loving kindness to. You have to think about that person and why it is that that person stimulates a feeling of goodwill in you. So, for example, you think of someone that you can easily have a feeling of goodwill towards. Who is that person? Why is it that you feel it towards that person? What have they done for you that makes you feel that? So it's giving the mind something to do to get it interested and to give it some stimulation, but within a specific area, not just wildly thinking. So the kind of meditation, the other meditation which is very suitable for the mind when you're drowsy is meditation on death, Maranānusati, where you deliberately remind yourself that death is certain, and this opportunity to practice may not come again. Make the best use of it. What does it do to the mind when you contemplate the certainty of your own death? You can think about different ways that you would prefer to die, different ways that you hope you don't die, to give again the mind some stimulation, but it's generating that sense of making the best use of the time we've got. And once you've done that kind of contemplation, you might find that you're awake enough to then go back to the body and then to the breath. Yes. Yes. Then the other reason why sloth and torpor arises in meditation is because we don't want to see what's being thrown up in the mind. It's a way of avoiding what's happening in the present moment. And so we fall asleep. So, for example, when we meditate, we might find that there's a lot of dissatisfaction for one reason or another, and we don't really want to look at that. We don't see where that's want to see where that's coming from, and so we drift off. And I'm saying this out of personal experience. When I first started to meditate, I went through months and months and months of sloth and torpor. I just couldn't, every time I sat down, it was just, I'd fall asleep. And it was really just the mind not wanting to see what was coming up in the mind. Now, that's not always the case, but if you go through an episode of sloth and torpor, it's often because there's something in your life that's happening right now that you don't really want to address in your meditation. When you sit down to meditate, you can't avoid it, and so then you avoid it by falling asleep. Well, yes. Yes. Okay, so if the you're not trying, there are different kinds of meditation. So the kinds of meditation that the Buddha encouraged, like loving kindness meditation and Maranānusati, are one of or two of 40 different kinds of meditation objects that the Buddha has given. Depending on people's predisposition and personality, different meditation objects will take them into a quiet mind, but they need to use up or direct their energy in a particular way before the mind does come to a place of quiet. So, for example, with loving kindness meditation, it's not just the thoughts about people that you like that starts to generate an actual feeling that becomes the predominant experience, which becomes the meditation object. So eventually there's no thought there, it's just a feeling. So if you're finding that you become very peaceful with the breath and then you fall asleep, it's a matter of generating sufficient energy before you get into that really peaceful state so that it will take you through. You have to have enough sharpness of mind. You have to have the mind gathered together, knowing what it's doing. It's like if you were in a car and you were going down a hill that's muddy and there's a lot of mud at the bottom and you speed down to it, if you don't have enough speed and you don't know what you're doing to hold on to the wheel, when you get to the bottom you might take your foot off the accelerator because you're going so fast, and then you just stop. But if you know what you're doing and you know when to accelerate, you can get through that muddy patch. So going into the meditation, you have to have sufficient presence of mind and know what you're doing to keep the mind sharp once you get to the peacefulness, so the mind doesn't sink. Sinking is a very common experience once the mind starts to get peaceful. Once the thoughts subside, there's nothing to keep you stimulated. So before you start the meditation, you need to tell the mind that you're going to be sharp even when peacefulness arises. And when you go through with watching the breath, you have to make your watching the breath very precise. So you start to watch every breath, every individual in-breath, every individual out-breath. You don't coast along, missing the individual breaths, but just getting the flow of the breath. You've got to be sharp. It's the awareness, the quality of the watching mind, making it sharp, bright, really to the point, that gives it that energy to go through. And then also there's the delight that comes in watching the breath. That is also giving the mind energy to stay sharp and focused, rather than, oh, here's this peacefulness, just falling into it. You've got to keep seeing within that breath that the breath is just really the means, the vehicle that you're using to move through. You've got to keep sharpening and sharpening and sharpening the awareness of the breath, rather than letting it all fall apart once the peaceful feeling comes. Okay. Sometimes these things are hard to put into words, but once you've heard them, and then you go back and observe what is actually happening in the meditation. When does the mind start to lose its energy? What's happening at that point? And then you get familiar with that, and so you're prepared for when that point comes, for not falling into that slothful state. Right. Looking at anxious feelings in meditation is a time not to look at them. That's right. What we're trying to do is to develop the mind, and to develop the mind to a state beyond its ordinary way of being. And if we get caught up in examining our anxious thoughts or our thoughts of ill will, while the mind is still in its ordinary state, we will just see things as we normally do, and we'll play out the same kinds of conversations and the same reactions that we normally do. So we are trying to put the thinking down and stay with the meditation object until the mind becomes brighter and is elevated beyond its normal state. At the end of the meditation, or as a separate part of the meditation, it can be very useful then to revisit those anxious feelings, because the mind is no longer so contracted and just really at ground level, if you like. And it can be very useful to look at a situation in our life with the mind more energetic, more energized through the meditation, with a different kind of clarity in the mind than we normally have. But there are many different kinds of meditations, and some of those meditations do require that we think about a particular subject, contemplate around it, like the certainty of death, but then move through that contemplation to a place where again the mind is one-pointed. It's one-pointed on that particular subject to the exclusion of all others. And then that takes us into a different kind of consciousness than we normally have where the mind is distracted. But the main meditation subject that we use here is the breath, because that tends to be a very peaceful, pacifying object, and it's one that is suitable for most people. So if there are no more questions, those of you who'd like to stay meditating here are welcome to do so. I ask people not to talk in the hall or just outside. If you would like to ask me any more questions, I'll be over in the reception area for a while, and please come over there and ask any questions over there. Thank you.